There. Welcome to the Car Sim and Race Driver Show. And you've heard some of the uncut, unedited version there of my co-host having a good chat about how they definitely don't plan for the show. And welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us. You're watching the Car Sim and Race Driver Show, and we're here live on YouTube, on Facebook, and also you can hear us coming through the airwaves on Podbean as well.
Welcome. Do something on Podbean for me.
Yes, you're more than welcome to.
I've called in, but it's telling me. Oh no, I'm there now. Okay, fair enough. Yeah,
no, you're on there. It's just Jonathan, I think, who's waiting to come through.
No, you don't. No. So, John, before we go anywhere else, I would just like to, on the pretext of being silly, but on the actual fact of being incredibly at awe with the job you do.
There we are, yes.
Well, okay, there's all these people that, you know, Lewis Hamilton's and all the idiots like that, who drive around in circles on a black tarmac thing. But do you not do this three-dimensional complicated thing where hundreds of people that are relying on you to do your job well, so that they don't, well, how can I put this, die in a big ball of fire in the thing? Are you not an airline pilot? Okay. Yeah, so I just want to interrupt you by bigging you up. Well, by saying that my job is to sit at home and do nothing, and Hugh's job is to be an entrepreneur, which apparently there's, according to George W. Bush, there's no French word for. And your job is to make sure a bunch of people don't die while flying in the air because you're an airline pilot. Well, I'm just saying that if anybody wondered whether we have the expertise, they do these things where they fly flashing lights and they hit them and all this kind of stuff. I'd just like to say to anyone that's listening, anyone, anywhere, hello?
Anyone, hello.
That Mr. John here is probably the closest thing to a racing driver, apart from Mr. Hugh Hattrick, who's proven himself in a Mercedes to be quite capable and in a simulator, to be pretty damn good at stuff. Thank you very much.
But I did actually go onto the Kudos Prime site. Now, if anyone who's watching and listening, if you've been on Kudos Prime, it's a site where you can find out how you're doing on GT Sport. It gives you all your points, all your wins, and how you're going compared to like the average driver, if you're in the top run or if you're further down. And I did happen, because you said you had five wins, John, I thought, well, you'll be racing up the field on your points score. And I looked at it earlier on before the show, and it was at 4,800. And I thought, what did you do? How? I thought you'd be right up there, because I'm on 27. There's about 70,000 or something. And not many. You may as well make the noise now. Well.
You see, you get these.
I've got an apple.
I cannot hear me. An apple? Oh, I tried that the other day. When we were doing our live commentary, excuse me, John, can I ask you a question? Would you be willing to join us or replace me? One of the two, on the live commentary. Because honestly, you're far more clever than me. And you've got like words and things. and ability. Do you know what you mean? I'm really good at talking crap. Come on.
Yeah, that's what I've done for years.
See this face. This face. This is a face for radio. This is literally. Oh, I'm not helping myself here, am I?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. Right. I can't hear myself in my little earpiece on Podbean. I'm only asking because it says here I'm connected.
Yeah, no, you're definitely on.
But normally I can't hear myself. Normally I can hit.
Yeah, I'm not getting any echo. It must be coming through. And you're both online. Perhaps
I understand. What's going on? Why? What's happening?
It must be working a bit better. Maybe they've put in a new server or something and it's all working.
I don't know.
What we're going to do.
Whatever, I'll just believe you.
Just for all our viewers and listeners, we've got a very exciting announcement. We were just talking about this before we started the show. Our Thursday night show is very relaxed, but I'm due to be interviewing a very special guest very, very soon. And I'm hoping
talking about him a minute ago.
Yes, but we're not going to mention any names. Don't mention any names.
And, what? Why?
Because I haven't asked him yet. But and he might say no. I'm sure he'll say yes. Yeah, I'll be wanting a holiday after this
that
one.
But
no, I'm pretty sure we'll get an interview with him. And I was hoping to invite him onto the show at night time on our Thursday night very relaxed stream that we have here with you two as well. Because you had a chance to ask him questions, and I think it would be quite fun to have you ask him questions as well and get a bit of the banter going. You'll see you'll see all his trophies.
Banter?
What's banter. That? The banter, that's the chat, the kind of the men's chat.
The Americans. I had a recent interesting thing on, what's that thing? American Twitter, right? Twitter, right? And they had a picture of a shopping trolley. And they went, what do you call this? And lots of people put shopping trolley, and lots of people put shopping cart. And then somebody decided to be sarcastic about it. And put up a picture of a tram car. Just get confirmation? We would call a tram car a tram car.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, there's a tram. But then the individual bits you're just standing or sitting is called a car, right? Is that true? Am I just inventing that? What is it, John? You know stuff. Is that a car? Can you?
If it was like an old one, isn't it?
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Yeah, well, the bit between the engine and where you sit, I call it a car. If you get a Blackpool, you got a tram car. So this guy goes, cart. So I put, no, that's a tram car. Now, I'm not great with conflict. So I don't like to argue with people, okay? You're right, okay? Both of you. Whatever you say. Now, this guy goes, it's interesting the psychology of people disagreeing with you. He went straight to insults. You obviously don't know English. And it's like, you're American, aren't you? You can tell. and he just basically was insulting. Now,
a tram carriage, says Ant. Ah, that's there.
What do they know? From Stoke. Shut up. Carriage? Carriage?
If you go to Prague, you'll see the tram carts, the old ones, right up there in Prince Wenceslas Square, and it's lovely, actually. They make them into cafes, so you can go and sit in one, and you can have a coffee or an ice cream or a hot dog or something, and they're really nice. But the trams are really dangerous, though, in Prague, because they come right next to the pavement, and they come really fast. And if you're not looking in the right direction, you don't see, you get wiped out straight away.
That?
That's in Prague, and like the ones in Edinburgh are so slow, you could be knocked down and nothing happens.
In Edinburgh, but what?
And nothing happens, but in Prague, we actually get you somewhere.
I spent a year living in Germany. What are you talking about? I spent a year living in Germany, okay, with a Straßenbahn, as it's called. And the Straßenbahn is a wonderful thing. It's like a little mini set of trains, and if you wish to. You can go to from the very southern border of Deutschland all the way to the northern border of Deutschland on a Straßenbahn. It'll take a very long time, but they have hexagonal regions and you can buy tickets that take you all the way through. The most fantastic thing I ever had was sat on a Straßenbahn as a student doing my placement in the BASF, Bayerische Annalen- und Soderfabrik Aktiengesellschaft, when a guy had double parked in a Mercedes and got the side of his car taken off by a Straßenbahn. They have a bell that goes ding, 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 which informs everyone they're either going to run you over or they're going to smash into your car if it's in the way. And they don't slow down, whether it's intentional or whatever. So we're in the middle of Ludwigshafen am Rhein, and there's this crunching sound, and the side of a very nice Mercedes became much smaller as they really... Well, this was 1990, so...
They're quite solid then.
It was like an E190 or something like that, which is what all the taxis were.
Yeah, it's
crap. Every single taxi in Germany was a Mercedes until the 190E. If you wanted to know how good Mercedes were or were not, look at the taxis, because every taxi in Germany was a Mercedes until the 190E, when they started looking elsewhere because it was a bit... What's that special word that's not swearing? Nope, there isn't one. I'll use a sweary one. Shit! And, No. It was made out of a nugget of plastic. Yes, I've driven them. The 190E, like all Mercedes, had a steering wheel the size of your average Welsh girl's arse. And, sorry, I'm thinking of my ex-wife. No, I'm actually looking at
I'm
my...
I'm glad it's not suitable for children.
I have an image of my ex-wife's arse. Which I still loved. She didn't believe me, but I still loved it. Anyway, but the thing is that what they were is really unreliable compared with proper Mercedes. Yes, exactly. But then the 190 came out. Somebody decided the way to make money was to make shit, but lots of it with a badge on it. You know, we've had. I don't know if we've had this conversation yet, and I'm not entirely sure we've got the time for me to really start on this conversation. But this thing about the word the mark. MARQUE. So my personal bugbear is Saab. Saab were a brilliant engineering firm that happened to have some wheels on their airplanes. And then General Motors went, "Oh, hey man, we ain't got it to be able to get a BMW. Mercedes, Saab. We'll get the Saab." I don't know. What does destroy? Can somebody tell me how destroy it sounds? Hello. If anyone's listening to America, I'm not going to apologise for fuck all. Okay. But what I'm going to do is tell you that Americans have made some incredible cars. General Motors have been at the helm of some of them, but mostly by accident. Okay. Well, not true. Because of the money making bean counting accountant assholes that were in charge when Reagan was around. Git. So they bought Saab and they went bleep, 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 like that. And then they that was me being American. Does that help? No? And what they did is they moved car development from Trollhättan in Sweden, where the insane Swedish people used to whip each other with the bit of the bark and get in the snow and bloody well build proper cards, as I knew, because I had four in a row. And all card development was moved to Opel. So what you got was a Vauxhall with a Saab badge. And they went, nobody's buying... Hey, man, nobody's buying the Saabs anymore because it's a crap version of an expensive Calibra. Woo! And it was a real shock to them that having a car that was made like a piece of crap was no longer considered to be a direct competitor of Mercedes or BMW. Mercedes made the same mistake, but they realised it quicker because they're not American. So the 190E was that thing where they tried to make a car in volume with lower standards, not as reliable, and it took a couple of years for them to realise, but the taxi drivers realised really quick because they do thousands, hundreds of thousands of kilometres in a car and it needs to work and not break.
Yeah. Now, was it not a few years ago on that, did GM do a merger with Fiat for a while and then they split again, didn't they?
Oh,
or was it Fiat and Daimler? I can't remember which one it was.
Did you say GM?
Did GM
Chrysler and Mercedes, yeah.
That's right. Yes, it was
51%
Chrysler and
Mercedes, 49% Chrysler. Oh, my God, all the things that could go wrong in one thing.
And it did. But the thing the company that saved Chrysler
Fiat.
Was the most unexpected company
Fiat.
Ever. Was Fiat, in effect, because the Fiat group came in and bought them after the recession. And actually, they've done pretty well out of it. And nobody saw that one coming. And, you know, it's I thought there was some alcohol involved, but it was... that makes
What, you
sense.
Actually think that this is me with alcohol? This is me anyway. Honestly, Do you know what I keep going on about how we need to get John on? There's a reason. You're the sensible one. He's the intelligent one that knows stuff. And I'm just a bird that sits in the back.
And saying get you some coffee. Get you a delivery of some very strong coffee with some tomato juice in it or something. But it was like...
Patrick, have you just typed in Andrew's on a good run tonight?
Yes, I did a wee while ago. That was when you were on your Saab run. It was the
you got Saab, isn't it? Saab, Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, that's true.
Possibly Triumph. Trim.
No.
They were. Project 4. Oh, Clarkson's. I had a huge argument on Twitter recently about the Saab. Okay, you've got the Lancia Tema, you've got the Fiat Chroma, you've got the Alfa 164, and you've got the, what was the other one you just said?
The Saab.
No, not Saab. Oh, yeah, Saab 9000. And they were jointly produced, jointly developed, sorry, English, the floor plan, right? And it's called Project 4. And the idea was, it's a good idea. It was before its time. Now, every floor plan you buy is probably the same floor plan of at least six cars. Okay? And, It's bit on the... No. Fiat Tipo, Audi 80, Audi A4, and the Golf. No, those three, you Burke with your hat. Okay, you Mr. McLaren with your Vodafone hat. No, There were the, okay, so for example, the Golf, the Audi A3, the Seat Ibiza, the Skoda, whatever. Skoda. Think something smaller than Octavia. Smaller. I don't know. Golf size, for God's sake. Yeah, Octavia and the all of them, Toledo, all this kind of, all based on the Golf chassis, right? Okay. The Audi A4, the Passat Plus, which became the Skoda Superb, which became the Audi A6. They were all stretched versions of the longitudinal engine. They were all based on that chassis. You know, then basically you've got probably about four or five chassis in the world based on the same floor plan. Now, back in the day, they tried it to reduce costs, and they had, as we said, the Lancia Tema, the Fiat Croma, the R464, and the
Lada
1000. No, not the Lada. That was a Fiat 124, you Burke. God. These Italian stokies, they need a slap. Now, the point is, I was having this massive argument with somebody on Twitter about how the Saab 9.5 was not a Fiat.
It was worse. It was worse than a Fiat. Certainly the last 9.5 that we drove was terrible. Remember they had the...
9.5? I didn't say 9.5. Did I say 9.5?
You said 9.5.
Okay, I meant 9.5.
We've got it recorded. We've got
the 9.5 was the bastard child of a Vectra and a Saab 9000. It was what I can personally consider to be the last actual Saab because it had something to do with Saab. I actually meant 9000. I do apologise. I'm looking at you now. The 92X, the Subaru Impreza with the Saab badge on it and a 2.4-litre engine. Shut up. Yes, just a bit. Second only to the other Saab, which was the Saab 9...
It could be worse.
9.8, 9.7X. Yeah. It was a GM thing.
Yeah.
And then Saab disappeared. Now, Koenigsegg tried to buy them, and they couldn't get clearance to buy them because apparently they weren't big enough. So Spyker bought them, and the company disappeared. What a bloody good idea. Koenigsegg is an awesome company. Koenigsegg's factory is in an old Saab hangar. They actually, their ghost thing is the symbol for a Saab Draken or Viggen squadron. Oh my God, who's the best people to buy Saab? It's a bunch of mad Swedish people who have no air. Oh, that's easy. They were doing that in the 80s. Seriously, they were the first production car to have turbocharging. They used the Triumph 60. You know all the stuff that Leyland didn't do right? Saab. Well, pretty much everything. Do you remember the Dolomite Sprint?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
16-valve, 2-litre, 130 horsepower between carburetors. The O-Series 2-litre had like 90 if you were lucky. It did 5 miles to the gallon less. So... all these very crusty people that knew people in Parliament. Oh, we don't want anything like this. What we want is something that's made out of chocolate. And Willy Wonka was involved in it. Oh, no, we don't want that. So they sold the 16-valve engine to... ooh, who was it now? Wait a minute. Let me think. Oh, it was Saab, wasn't it? And they put it, 130 horsepower, carburetor-fed engine in then the Saab 9000, 16-valve. Then they went, we can't afford to develop a V8 engine. So what should we do? Stick a really great big turbocharger on it and learn how to do turbocharging on production cars. Now, what was one of the fastest cars of the 80s? It was a Saab 9000 16 valve turbo with 190 horsepower before Cosworth had even woken up and gone, yeah, Ford might want this. Come on. Saab, awesome. Proper Saab. Love them. And they don't break, apart from the gearboxes. Mine did explode on the A55 after 2 years of going ram, 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 ram. Okay, but apart from that, they were great. Everything else is fantastic. And then they get the arseholes like Clarkson sitting in 9.5. Right, so General Motors takes it over and they go, right, we're going to turbo blah, something. Now, the world's first properly electronic engine management system, the Trionic Engine Management System, was invented by, who could it be? Saab. And they put it on their cars, and all the car manufacturers went, that's silly. And within 2 years, they all had one. So, you know, it's quite interesting how.
Can I quickly interrupt?
No.
We went to a great driving day in Edinburgh a number of years ago.
I don't believe you.
It was Western Saab at the time. Yeah, and it had the Saab 9.5. Oh, no, it was a 9.3, sorry, 9.3. It was a 9.3. And they set out...
The 9.3 is shite!
I know. Well, this is the thing.
You need fucking Calibra chassis! God.
It was, they said they had a guarantee. It was ever. And they basically said, we guarantee that once you've driven the Saab 9.3 against all its major competitors, the Audi A4, BMW 3 Series, right? They had the other two cars there, of course, because Western ranked in sales for both of them. They were convinced that you would want to buy the Saab. So we all went up.
Because they put the key in the middle.
And I can't remember if we drove the Saab first or if we drove it second or whatever it was. But the great thing was you didn't have to have a salesman with you. They just gave you the keys and let you go. And we had this wonderful road around the back of Costco in kind of next to the old bypass. And we went around this little track and then we came back to the garage in about 10 minutes or 10, 15 minutes. And quite clearly, what
took you that long? A bit slow, yeah.
It was considerably the worst car in the three. Was the
awful.
Saab,
hate them. I've had friends that have owned the Saab 9.3. Do you know why the Saab 9.3 existed? Can I tell you what? I'm not going
to
do it anyway.
Major cost cutting to save the company, was it not?
No. It took them 20 odd years. 1974, the original Saab 900 was invented.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have driven them, and I have never driven a car that was so planted. I mean, I'm not messing about here. On Anglesey, from the Anglesey circuit to Croes, which is where fifth gear used to do their cars, I drove, there's a garage that had a Saab 900 injection 16 valve, and I drove it down those little roads. And like you two, I am used to, what should we call them? Proper roads?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, like where they go out in the middle of nowhere and they've got these, what are those funny things that people don't understand how to use? Oh, yeah, corners. And they go around them. And I drove this thing and it's, only about 5 miles, but I knew straight away, bloody hell. And also, this car was designed in the 70s and it ergonomics. I mean, every car's got ergonomics now, but the Saab 900 and the 99 before it and all this kind of stuff, had somebody went, if you're driving this and you're going to shoot somebody down, what you want is everything at your fingertips. So you're holding the steering wheel and there's two little joysticks, one for each electric heated mirror, which also nobody else had. And you just go, and you're moving them. You don't have to let go. This is kind of level of detail that Saab was putting into their designs. In the 70s, come on, we had the box version of a Cortina, which is shite. It's like you get three boxes, you put a crap Ford engine in the front, and you put the oldest axle on the back.
Yeah.
Come on!
They handled better. The Cortina handled better if it was a cut and shut. You know,
the Cortina handled better If it hit a wall, I keep getting these Twitter things saying yes or no, and the answer is no. Mark 1 and Mark 2, Cortina. Superb. With the Lotus 16, yeah. All that kind of stuff. It looked great for the day. It handled great. If it didn't, not even for the day, it handled better than it did later anyway. Get stuff. Come on. So, Saab 900, Saab 99, all this kind of stuff. This was about 20, 30 years ahead of its time in every single way. People go on about Volvo being safe cars. Saab originated safe cars. Saab originated safe cars. I had a mate. I bought my last Saab, the one that was at gearbox exploded. I bought it for £250, okay? It had 150,000 miles on it. So when I talk about the gearbox, it had 150,000 miles on it.
Did it run?
£250. I had it for 3 years before the gearbox exploded.
Was it £250?
No. The first Saab 9000 I had was a 2-litre S. It was a G-Reg. And it had 169,000 miles on it when I bought it and over 200,000 miles on it when I finished with it. Do you know why I stopped using it? It's because the wing mirror was taken off for the second time by a Berk who can't drive. And the insurance company went, we're not paying for that because it was so old and knackered. It was one of the best cars I've ever owned.
Yeah, classic. Well, I had the Maestro for 25 quid. And it lasted me.
You were done, mate. I had two Maestros and four Montegos. You were done because mine were all free and they were still shit.
Well, I actually sold mine. I bought it. Yeah, it was better.
It was because it dissolved before you saw it, John.
The thing was, it was one of my first ever auction. I kept it quite quiet.
You managed to sell it. You sold it in an auction.
No, I bought it in an auction.
You bought it?
I was the only person to put in a bid, right?
Stop.
And literally...
No,
literally,
seriously, stop. Stop now. Ladies and gentlemen who are watching this podcast and video, Hugh Hattrick, with the car, sim and race driver show, is a talented and clever individual that has great bargains, not of which... are buying a Maestro at an auction. This was before he had anything.
It would have been his in brain, 1997, 98.
He was on drugs. 22, 23. Any excuse?
Yeah. It was when I was working for Hamilton Brothers. We used to have Fiat along. It was bad.
I've had two of them.
It had done 75,000 miles. It had had an
MOT
for about 6 months. And it was still, you know, at the time it was still taxed. At those times, you know, if you bought a car with tax on it, you could run it for the length of the tax. And a friend of mine had been saying, oh, you should go to the auction. And I never really bought anything at that time, I don't think, from the auction. I looked at the car. I was that embarrassed that I bought it. I didn't tell you. I think you must have been away somewhere. I think you were away somewhere on holiday or something. The funny thing was, the car, I thought, I've just bought this thing, and I had very little money at the time. As a derivative, it's kind of, I had literally a budget of about 200 quid. And when I saw it drive in, and it was fine. It started straight away. They drove it in. It all seemed to be fine. It had been serviced. It was a bit rusty. And I thought, well, you know, you never know. See where it goes. And I thought, I'd actually bought it to sell to see if I could get any business out of it, see if I could get any interest. And I thought, if it was that cheap, what could go wrong? And so I put it on at the time. Yeah. And the regulations were a lot looser, you could say. So you didn't have to, you know, you could have a go and see what happened. So I remember parking it at my old flat. I like that. What is it doing now? What have you done with that? But it was the thing. I actually sold it within about 2 days. I put an ad in one of those at the time. It was like a local paper.
Did you part exchange it for one of your daughters? Because honestly, there was no other way you'd get rid of that car.
I sold it to an Australian chap who was looking for a car. Seriously, he didn't really... Oh, exactly. He just wanted a car.
He heard the name and he decided, Maestro, this is like a magic, yeah? Ah, hello, mate. Maestro? Oh, that's great. We'll have a wonga. Australian.
The thing was, in the auction hall, they were so surprised anyone bought it, right? It had obviously gone through a few times, I think, and it hadn't been sold. And so the guy said, look, I'll take it. You can basically have it for nothing, because even though they got a bid of 20
nothing was too much.
The guy that was selling it, I think it was a garage that was disposing of it, just said, we weren't expecting to get anything for it, so just charge the fee. So I didn't actually pay a bid. It was like, you know, I think they would like give me like a minimum bid and then just put the minimum fee at the time, which was about 30 quid. So I actually drove it away from the auction site for literally about 30, 35 quid. And I sold it for £200. Couldn't believe it. Because this is actually not too bad. Yeah, not too bad. And the Australian guy...
No, markup. Someone paid £200 for that. For it. Well,
at that time, it was only about maybe 8 or 9 years old. He wasn't that old. And the Australian chap who bought it, he liked it that much. He actually, when he went back to Australia, he emailed me and said, look, thanks very much. And the car lasted. He said he got it through an MOT. He said he went through an MOT and he was able to retax it. He ended up staying for about a year and a half. And he got it retaxed and it was fine. And he got his MOT and it was absolutely fine.
No.
So he said it lasted. No. He was so pleased. And I was amazed. I thought I was probably going to go in a ball of fire somewhere in the middle of Oban or something.
No. But
So I only had it for about 2 years.
I drove a 2-litre MG Maestro. The only thing I can say about the Maestro and Montego, two things, okay, which I can compliment them on. Space. Tons of space in them. I mean, one of the most practical estate cars I've ever owned was a Montego estate. And, you know, with the built-in, you know, the Countryman and all that kind of stuff, and the built-in, I was going to say headrest. What's that thing on the roof? Roof rack. Thank you. Well done. And the second thing was the chassis, when it wasn't knackered, was actually very good. And I've explained to possibly Hugh, definitely not John, that the... Do you remember we were talking about the episode Polonaise, John?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the classic, which apparently some people found funny. But I passed my test in episode Polonaise, and I argued with the examiner in Huddersfield because I thought I'd screwed it up. But apparently I'm a little bit of a perfectionist.
I'm surprised they ever thought...
No. John, how long have you known me over the internet now? A few months? I'll let it into a secret. I am not average. I'm being polite now. I've never met anyone like me. And I like to do what is known as a good job. And I didn't think I did a good job on my driving test. Now, chief examiner, a woman. I'm only saying that because in those days it was a thing. It probably is now, actually.
Well, yeah, think of the diversity they're going to have in driving instructors and examiners now.
I could do accents if you like. I was in Huddersfield and this lass said, right, miss... Can you just tell me what I'm pleased to tell you that you've passed your test. And I went, you what? Because what happened, this was literally just after they'd brought in reverse parking. Okay, so I was one of the first people that had to do reverse parking for my driving test. And I got halfway through the manoeuvre, and this woman said, carry on, thank you very much. I'm like, so my assumption is I've screwed it up. It was so bad that I didn't need to do it anymore. So I'm driving along, and I am shaking. I'm changing gear like this. Because I like cars a little bit. That's my camera. A little bit. And I like driving somewhat, and I thought I'd failed. So I was a bit nervous then. I was fine before. I was a bit nervous then. So we pulled up outside the flower standings as I was a student. And she goes, I'm pleased to tell you, you passed your test. I'm like, what? Really? She goes, well, yes. She goes, but I screwed up. And I listed all the things where I thought I'd screwed up. And she goes, yeah, but you did fine. And I'm like, yeah, but when I did the reverse parking, you stopped me halfway through, which was the beginning of my problems, okay? She goes, yeah, because you'd obviously got it right. I didn't see the point in carrying on the manoeuvre. I wish you'd bloody well carried on the manoeuvre, because then I wouldn't have thought I'd screwed it up. Anyway, that was in the episode Polonaise. Now, A470, I am not going to tell anybody on this. Well, no, I'm going to tell them now, actually, because they've ruined it, because they've put these wide, they've modernized it, which means in my language, ruined it by making it wide for all these morons that can't do corners. The A470, I mean, everyone's been on the A5 for a long time. I went on the A5 once when I was driving from South Wales to North Wales to do my master's degree on the way to my interview. And I was basically spent the entire time stuck behind somebody going, ah, I can't do it. A470, on the other hand, was brilliant. It was, oh my God, it's the perfect road for testing a car, until more recently, where they have decided all these bits that were perfect for testing a car need to be removed and the nature destroyed by putting a massive flyover of a valley instead of having a
couple of corners.
Well, you know when you go into a valley. And then you go over, and you go, oh, wow, this has got amazing grip, and the changing radius of the corner is fantastic, and the brakes are great. Yeah, you don't have it anymore. What you've got is you've got a sort of a country-wide motorway that you don't need any skill or capability to drive. You need a Tesla that does it for you, which is why everyone's going to die, because the computer's going to screw it up. Do you know the Airbus incidents where they plummeted into the Atlantic because they were stalling and the beeps told them that they were... The beeps told them something different on the computer compared with what a human being would understand. So instead of dipping the nose and gaining speed to the stop stalling, they were all inexperienced. They all believed the computer and they just... did the opposite of what they need to do, and then it killed everybody on this. This is a well-known crash that happened in the Middle Atlantic. Yeah. Now the problem is, I don't know enough about planes to tell you which A3 whatever the bollocks it was. Thank you very much. See, it's why I like this guy, because he knows. And I've got this in chemistry. I'm a chemist, as you know, a chemist. Health and safety in the laboratory. They now have RIDOR, they have COSH, they have risk assessments, this kind of stuff. And I've never been in a laboratory that's less safe. Because instead of thinking and using this thing in this amazing set of neurons in our head to work stuff out and learn if you train properly, a computer tells you how to do it, so you go, oh, yeah, I don't think about that anymore. Now, I came up to a guy when I was doing my master's degree. This was a second-year undergraduate in the University of Wales, Bangor. And I'm looking for somebody, and I said to the guy, where's the XYZ? And he goes, oh, I don't know. And I'm looking at him, what are you doing? He was boiling ether. This is petroleum ether. This boils at 40 degrees C, and it's basically petrol plus, okay? And he's in this round bottom flask on what you see on all these television programs around a rotary evaporator. It's got the water boiling. So this is at 100 degrees C. The thing boils at 40, but it's got it filled to the very, very top, which means it's boiling off a tiny little area like that. And he goes, oh, it's not boiling off. And I said to him, right.
Run.
Take it off of there. I said to him, half fill it. Well, hold on. This is before we got there. I said, take it off of there. Empty half of it out so there's a big area that it's evaporating on. Don't put it in there because that's too hot. And it'll come off in 2 minutes. And then you add the other half and you come off to me. Oh, stuff it. He said, I'm going to stick it on a Bunsen burner. So apparently, lovely Rue. Well, a little bit. Now, the first thing I was told in the laboratory is if anything's flammable, you don't need to use a naked flame. This guy obviously hadn't been told this because instead of going to a polytechnic like I was, he went to a university where they're clever. I told him. Apparently, I was a bit harsh, I've been told. I told him, if you want to kill everybody or kill yourself, jump off the Menor Bridge. You're not taking us with you. And that might have been apparently a bit harsh. So, but it's the same thing. This guy had no basic understanding of danger or thinking. So I have a problem with cars doing it for you as well. Even ABS. We've got cadence braking. If you can learn cadence braking, you don't need bloody ABS. Our brain is so much better than a computer.
I remember your Uncle Edward saying that too. We don't need the ABS. Oh, we had a great, great run with that.
There may have been a slightly different problem there.
Yeah, we all thought, believe in ABS brakes.
Give me that. I'll give that, yeah.
That was incredible. That was something. But that reminds me when you were talking about going into the valleys and up there on that Saab driving day that we did. I took that BMW 3 Series with your mate as well. Another your mate along.
What driving day?
On the Saab driving day, the one when they said we were convinced to buy a 9.3, and we were in the BMW 3 Series, and it was a great car to be fair. And so we came down the valley, and it was this bit, and it kind of goes to the right and then to the left. And I remember coming out of the top, and Jonathan just said to me, I don't think you could have gone any faster coming out of that corner. I think it was an A4, now the A4, and then the Saab. Mm. Yeah. That's right, on the way back. Yes, yeah, that's right. That was something, man. That's something. They got the maximum amount of that 3 Series round there, I think. And then right after that, they put in a blooming 30 mile an hour limit or 40 limit.
What's the point of that? Oh my God!
Yeah, they slowed it all down. But no, it is quite a thing. But yeah. So we've had everything tonight, from selling Maestros to the story of Saab.
Don't sell them, don't buy them, don't touch them, get stuffed. What are you on? Come on.
I haven't even mentioned Formula One. We've I have to say, I was being
trolled. Who's the div of the week? Anybody? Do an official announcement and then come up with one, because I haven't got one.
Well, it's a hard one. Because
no one said anything.
Well, this is the part of the point I was going to come to. I've been looking through the main headlines of motorsport this week. And they are always, obviously, they're desperately trying to make headlines and stories. And there was this thing saying about Formula One could be at the breaking point and what we're going to do and all the rest of it, and so on and so forth. With all of that. And it was with Jean Todt. And he was kind of saying, like, you know, he needs to be compassionate, because seemingly his son's girlfriend came down with coronavirus in Italy. But I think she is recovering. But obviously, she's been hit quite badly with that in Italy.
Oh, well, horrendous. There you go. Okay.
But it kind of, you know, when you get a headline, it sounds very serious, and you think, oh, this is what we're having a look at. And at the end of the day, there's just nothing in it. It's just about to be absolute, like, kind of general.
What do they call it? Clickbait?
Yeah.
Clickbait?
Yeah, exactly. And that's basically what it is. The headlines at the moment are complete clickbait. There's really not an awful, I think, because they're struggling to come up with anything. Which I'm a little bit surprised at. You think with the power of Formula One, they should be able to, they've got some good minds in there. You think they'd be able to come up with something. I mean, to be fair, Ross Brawn said he reckons it's going to be July before the F1 races start. And it will. Has he just got. All right, Ross, well, I was looking at it.
People,
I think that's the worst. Yes, that's what the.
Well, okay.
Well, the thing is, they were thinking at the earliest July and at the latest October. But they might do a closed door race in July, potentially at Silverstone, because it's easy for people to get to it and so on. And for the team, a lot of the teams are based there, and that's what they were looking at. But other than that, and there was the other thing that was quite interesting was Sebastian Vettel was saying that he thinks the current Formula One cars are just too heavy. And he puts all the blame on the engine. He says these hybrid era engines are far too heavy. So they're quite,
it's now the electric stuff,
750 kilos is now the weight of the car. Well, before, 10 years ago, it was only 600. And that
you know why they did that? There's a reason why they did that. And
they wanted to cut costs in the hybrid season.
Well, I'm saying no as a reaction. I don't actually know, but one of the reasons they did that. No, I'm being serious. Honestly, I am serious. Shut up, you. Was the weight of the drivers. I noticed when everything got silly, super light, that you got the likes of Mark Webber, who's 6'2 like me. His cheeks were sunken. He looked ill because they had to get their body weight down so low. And I have read, that's my caveat. I have read that is why they went to a higher weight, a minimum weight, to stop them insisting the drivers were at an unhealthy weight. Okay. So I can't, if that is truly the case, I can't, I can't be too.
Yeah, no, that was there was obviously that weight issue. But then 10 years ago, it was 600 kilos. Now it's 750. And that's a big weight increase. I mean, that's not like one whole person. It's more than that. So, it is quite different. But they're saying it's quite heavy. The cars are now quite heavy. And like before, when you're used to a light single-seater or a go-kart, it flings into the corners and you can, really get the full feel of it. Well, now it's quite a heavy car to move about in the slow corners. It's fine at the top end, and the downforce is ridiculous how much it is. But when you come to slow corners, it's quite a heavy car. Because it always surprises me when you see a Formula One car for real, is just how long it is. And now they're quite wide, they're 2 meters wide. So it's a big car. And obviously the view that they get out of the cockpit is hardly anything. It's incredible. You barely see over the front. And then the tires are quite tall. So, it's really quite a hard car to see out of. When we play it on a game, you tend to be a bit more raised up, so you get a much better view. But on the real thing, it's like you've done it, John, you've driven single-seaters, like with Formula Fords and things, I think was it that you drove. But it's quite a different view from actually driving it for real. Are you there, John? That's what the Red Door concept was. It's quite different. So I think what we forget is that it's, not only are they driving at incredible speeds, but they can't really see that much. It's the senses that's what you really get. And I think that's why when I drove the Mercedes at Brooklands, because it was a normal car, in effect, just a really good one, it was quite easy. It was quite straightforward. But I think, it's very different jumping into a single-seater and then having to do the whole thing from there, because if you sit too high, you just can't see.
It's a real problem for fans, okay, because people look at everyone and go, oh, that's easy. I mean, I was one of them. I was one of them before 95 when my darling wife got me into F1. I was one of the ones that went, it's just going round and round in circles, isn't it? I would dismiss it. I didn't understand the difficulty involved, okay? There was a Facebook, and one of the Facebook groups I'm in, they had a sort of a picture of an F1 driver lying in the cockpit. This is what an F1 driver has to do. And I put on there, and they can see nothing. They're in this little cockpit. They've got these super high sides, which come to about there, is it? Something like that?
Yeah.
It used
to be a lot lower. It used to be right down.
Was dangerous. I mean, we know why they did it, because we've seen the people die because they didn't have the protection. They've got the halo. But then they've also got the hands device, which tethers their head to be able to move that far.
Yeah.
How, so much. When people go, they should have seen him. Even I hate the idea.
I'm always amazed, actually, that they don't put cameras on the back and actually have some kind of small feed.
If they, that would be amazing. If they did that, instead of these tiny mirrors, aerodynamic devices, they get in the way. When you consider the tiny changes they make on the car to get better aerodynamics, these mirrors are a massive part of that.
Yeah. But on that matter, in Simulino in the old days, when you used to get the in-car cameras and they were always really bumpy and, you know, like they were wiping out, or there'd be a lot of interruption in the videos, it would go, you know, crackle and crunch. And that was similarly because the cars as well, the suspension just wasn't that refined. But when you look at the ones now, like the Mercedes and the other cars, they're so refined over the bumps.
Yes,
they're so much better that it stops all the interference coming from the car being unsettled, which is quite amazing how they've actually gotten more refined in a race car over 30 years or more.
Why have they not banned that? Why haven't they banned it? They ban everything else. You turn up in the morning, and if it's got something slightly different, they ban it. Why not?
For the DS.
Oh, well, yeah, DS is the latest thing. They ban everything else. Six wheels, ban it. Big fan on the back, ban it. Turning up in a pink suit. Nah, don't ban that. Girls like that. How many girls have you seen that have been genetically engineered to like pink? Come on. Seriously, though, it's just ridiculous. I was listening to a podcast today on Radio 4 with one of my favourite podcasters. I've got his name. What's his name? Oh, God. He's an economist and a statistician, and I'll get his name in a minute. I'll get his name in a minute because I'll open it on my phone.
Can I quickly say, we've got lots of guests on Podbean, which is fantastic.
So no, we haven't.
We've got a good few on tonight. It's good to have you all with us. And feel free to ask a question or leave a comment. It would be really, really good.
No.
And also, you can go to our website, which is www.qhattrick.com, and you can subscribe to our... you can subscribe there onto our channel.
The punishment is reserved for you. Right. Nick Harford. His name is Nick Harford, okay? And he is an economist. And he's a really good show called More or Less. Now, he's a statistician and all this kind of stuff. And he debunks ridiculous statistics, okay? And they were talking about, there's a few programs recently, it's the BBC's thing where they are concentrating on how women are so much better than men. Okay. Now, I'm saying this on this in this safe space with a bunch of people with no hair and hats. I have a spectacularly dystopian idea. Let's imagine that men and women aren't that different after all. There are differences. Genetically, there are differences. I know that. I get that. No, it isn't. Not according to something I heard earlier this week, because women have two X chromosomes and men have only one. So women have twice the chance of having a better immunity. They have a lot more robustness and this kind of stuff. And that all makes perfect sense to me as a scientist. That makes perfect sense. They've got double the chance of the genetics picking from something that's going to work a bit better. So the immune system and this kind of stuff is all much better. But then they start coming out with men always do more risky things, and men are more like this, and men are more like that. It's just nothing to do with having two X chromosomes. It's more to do with society. I was brought up, I'm a crier, I'm a wuss, I'm sensitive, I'm an empath. All these things that apparently men don't do. So my life as a child was hell. And I'm told that apparently I'm just a wuss or gay, pick one. There's no in between. And the fact that I'm a 6'2" git that will kill you if you really piss me off is irrelevant. I will cry while I'm doing it, but I will kill you. You know, just the point I'm saying, you know, my, it's ridiculous. I'm on websites where suicide is the biggest killer of men under 50 in Britain. What do the BBC do? They go, woo, men need to learn how to talk. Oh, go, because it isn't the problem. I've been trying to talk for 20, 30 years and no one's listening because I'm a man that should be tough. Society puts these constraints on what a man should be and then expects me to then be that while going that women can be anything what they like. So this is why I have an issue with female drivers, okay? We're told on Radio 4 this week, I could play the program. It's on my BBC Sounds, which is shit. Now that men undertake more risky activities, but they want more women in motorsports, which is a risky activity. So on one hand, they're saying men do this, but. And that's an excuse for one attitude towards men. And then they go, women need to be doing that. Well, my point is, well, the point. John, I'm not. As the society is at the moment, I would agree with you, but I don't think it's genetic. I don't think it's built into us. I think it's the way we're taught. Yes, yes, absolutely right. You're told that you've got to be sensitive, and then when you are, they go for the bad guy that beats the crap out of them, and you're like, huh? Where does that leave someone like me that is incapable of being a bastard? I'm just alone. I mean, I'm just alone. That's the way it is. Or gay. I'm part of me is like going, oh, you know what? Maybe I should just go for a bloke. Because, well, you hear women talk about it all the time, going, oh, she's just become a lesbian. Well, maybe I should just become fucking gay and stop putting up with all these double standards. No, I'm an old man. Compared with you, I'm a ridiculously, stupidly an old man. You know, being 50 years old.
Can I relate this a little bit back to
Shut up. We were having a proper conversation here and you're whatever the hell. The point I'm making is they go on about how women don't
are not allowed in motorsport.
And then they talk about how men do all these risky things. Pick one. You can't moan about how men are genetically engineered to be risky and then moan about how women aren't in motorsport. I want women in motorsport because I personally believe that women are no different to men in that respect. They're just trained differently from 0 years old. Does that make sense? I'm not asking you to agree with me, but the idea that if you're trained from the age of zero to be this way or that way, you're not going to do something risky, or you are. Yeah, you see, I've not seen that. I've not seen that at all. I've not, up until the age of six, girls and boys act in the same way until they're taught they should be different, including in emotional intelligence, you know, and then they get that they're streamed, and then they're told older, they should be the way they should be. And then they, you know, girls and boys up until the age of six play together seamlessly. That's a fact. That's known. Okay. And then from that point, they start getting trained to be stupid and streamed. And then they get so they go into boys and girls clubs. And then they get to the age of what, 12, 13, 14, and they come back together purely for the idea of pairing up. The thing is, there's no way of proving it. How, if you've got a child that's just been born, how do you separate that child from the influences of society? You can't do it. You can't do it. So, this is my idea. My idea is this. It's very simple. Who gives a crap? Be whatever the hell you want to be. If I don't completely agree with you. Philosophically, I don't agree with you, okay? I don't agree with you because F1's meant to be the pinnacle of motorsport and all this kind of stuff. However,
what was that thing about things not to say on a podcast?
Well, no. The point I have is that no one should be in Formula One without deserving to be there. The simple fact is that when you have enough girls who, like your daughter, Hugh Hattrick, who are mad on F1, when there's enough of them, if you look at the split of girls and boys who are interested in it, for whatever reason, when you've got 50-50 of them, you'll get 50-50 people in F1. This is how it works. The more
people, it's something like to encourage them.
You see what I'm saying? I'm not saying that there should be, I don't like positive discrimination. There should be people who deserve to be there. I grew up with a bunch of disabled people, okay? Seven of which died by the age of 25. Not a single one of them in their lives ever wanted a free ride for anything. They wanted to just live. They didn't want to earn it, or there was none of this crap about, oh, you want to earn it, you want to know you do. They just wanted to get on with lives. There was no kind of underlying thing going on. And that's the same with women. Why should women have to earn something because they're women? They should just earn something because they're people. If they're shit drivers, they shouldn't be in motorsport unless they're doing it for fun.
Now, that's an excellent topic, but I would like to raise something for a wee minute if I can. Is that all right?
No.
Yes. The Slapchop guy, who's a listener on Podbean, has asked a very interesting question.
No, he didn't.
I think I've pronounced that correctly. No. He asked, do we ever play R Factor? Now, what? For all our listeners, yes, R Factor 2, in fact, which is a game that you can download on the PC. You have to get steampower.com and then you go to that and you can set it all up and download it from
this
there.
This is a computing thing. Yes, what the hell?
Because now Jonathan and I play an awful lot of Gran Turismo, and it is quite good for a sim racing simulator. It's fun, it's quite easy to drive. But a lot of the real sim drivers and the real kind of enthusiasts,
they like me.
Proper simulators. Well, you've got a PC, you could set up.
But this is the point. I'm meant to be.
I don't know how much it is. To be fair, we can find out. I'm sure maybe some of our members might know. Our listeners might know as to what it costs. But it's supposed to be one of the best, most realistic simulators out there.
I like John's hat.
Yep.
when I went to Hockenheim, I was a McLaren fan, and he's got the McLaren hat, and it was really nice to see that weird orange colour in the middle of all the crappy red things and the Schumacher things. I just wanted to say...
You can have proper the steering wheel and pedals. It all works for that. So it's I mean, here I just had a comment there. from the Slapjot guy saying it's basically is the best, aside from the pro version, that the race teams use. So, I mean, it is something, if you're a serious sim driver and want to improve your racing, then that's the kind of simulator you'd want to be able to use. Oh, so I have to say, I think I should
sim racing. Oh, can we talk about that? Can we talk about sim racing? Can we talk about the two races that we went on about 2 months on the weekend?
Of course.
Okay. First, I want to say, I have decided that Tigweld, New York, I'm guessing that's what it says, NY, New York. Uh-huh. Tigweld, New York, who asked about the R Factor 2, yeah. Uh-huh. initially, I was, disparaging about it. But I have decided, after his last comment, that I thought I like him. Or her, could be her. Ooh, Tigwelding girl. Could be really hot. Wait a minute. Because, and I quote, ha 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 ha. Kanga. That's me. Somebody likes me. Anyway, that's enough. Thank you very much.
Well, that was an interesting input.
Not really.
But we should maybe try that, actually. Because it is possible to get our factor, and it is supposed to be really, really good. And he said if you've got a steering wheel and pedal set up, you should do well on it. So that gives us a chance to be competitive. We can try racing with... Well, he did say that you could... I told him that I had a G29, and it works. He says, no, you'll do well with that. So I thought, yeah. And you just download it on your PC, and then you can use your USB cables to go from your PC to your bigger screen. Obviously, your monitor and your PC is not big enough.
I can do that.
And you can do that. Yeah, so you can do all that. Because I've upgraded my computer recently, so it's a bit more powerful, just put a bit more gigabyte of RAM in it. But I'm not sure if the processors will be that good. But hopefully...
Not a girl.
But yeah, so we should try that.
Are you good looking and gay? Tigwell, tell us, are you good looking and gay? Because honestly, I've been alone for a very long time now and I'm kind of not wondering.
Is it so?
I know. This way before the lockdown.
Of my co-hosts,
honestly, this lockdown, it's been bliss for me. Apart from. We had the police. I put on Twitter the other day about a bunch of arseholes outside standing next to them. Me, 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 me. I'm like, yeah. So my comment was, oh, no, Tigweld's not gay. Oh, well. Okay, fair enough. Well, good bloke anyway. And they're all standing there, and I put on there, yeah, it's good to see the neighbours taking, lockdown seriously. And then the police arrive. Arseholes, say more.
But, yeah.
Am I the only one that thinks that something like not Call of Duty? Think of something where you get to kill everybody with a minigun.
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, that would do. Oh, that's brilliant! This is my two favourite things with a car. Was real.
I tell you what, the best reaction I ever got was when I went to the rental company in Orlando and they said, oh, have you driven in the States before? And I said, no, but I've played Grand Theft Auto.
Was this when you ended up on the wrong side of the road here?
Well, the thing is, the guy actually was giving me...
John or something, mentioned something about you going down the road along the wrong side of the road or something.
Well, that was in Spain. That was...
Did he say, and it's only got four cylinders? Anyone, if there's anyone, Tigwell, do you know what that reference is? Do you? Films. Do you?
Hello.
And it's only got four cylinders.
Oh,
this person, who may or may not be a tall female redhead with a massive smile, says because she's got small little tiny she can push the pedals down of this tiny little British car, and it's only got four cylinders with the charged cooler, and it's 2.2 16 valve with the turbocharger. It may or may not be something from Norfolk.
Oh, you've lost us there.
No, come on, it's one of the most famous films ever, and it may or may not be Pretty Woman. Sort yourself out.
Oh, that one, I was trying to think, the one that did kill
God, it wasn't there. What?
But yeah, no, she was a redhead in that, to be fair.
Are you serious?
That was the thing.
What? What?
Anyway, to go back to my...
I even remember that legs are 44 inches long in the bathtub. What's wrong with me? Oh, my God.
When I told the man behind the counter at the rental site, that when he said, have you ever driven in the States before? And then I said, no, but I've played Grand Theft Auto.
I've got a gun.
He was handing me the keys at the point, and he literally took his hand back when he said...
Do Hattrick say, yes!
So I said, don't worry, I didn't crash in that. So he gave me the keys and off we went. And that was it.
Was this a Mustang or something?
It was a Chrysler Grand Voyager. It was a V6 version.
Yeah, whatever.
To be fair, it was quite decent. It was like, I'm sure I've carjacked a few.
I have
in time.
And my one and only time in Orlando. It's really good because it was. James Bond, get a grip. When I went, the one and only time I went to Orlando with the Outlaws and all that lot, 2010. Sorry, I saw the last night launch of the STS-131, if anyone wants to look it up, of the space shuttle. And it was, you know, people use awesome quite a lot. Well, this is actually awesome. You know the real meaning of the word awesome. So the father-in-law managed to get some upgrade to something. I don't know. I wasn't listening to him. He's from South Wales. Who cares? And then we had to go to... I managed to run. I love that one. And I got the best one because I got a Ford Taurus. But what I got was a 3.5 litre, 273 brake horsepower, 6-speed Ford Taurus. And it was so much better than the Hyundai and the whatever the crappy thing was, which the Outlaws got. And played it down. They kept saying, is it any good? I'm like, no, it's rubbish. And then I used to just up the I-71. I actually got pulled over by the police.
Goodness, you have to be quite careful.
They were great. Do you know where I got pulled over by the police? Sebring, as in the racing circuit. And I was so excited by being in Sebring, I forgot what I was doing. Sebring. Oh man, I would have much preferred to be on Sebring. You know what I mean. That's the only time I've enjoyed driving an automatic car.
The chap who we did our Mercedes day, James Fletcher, who I've still been trying to get in touch with, actually, to come on the show. So if anyone knows, if he's watching, he needs to do an interview with us.
Yeah, he was just telling you that, so keep quiet, mate.
Probably. But I've had that before, to be fair, with Abby Eaton. Intense.
Yeah, I did that, and he still came back.
He had driven a Sebring because he was a GT driver. He does the GT Championship, and Sebring had been cancelled, I think. But he's driven there, raced there quite a few times. It's quite an event because these American tracks, they don't have the same runoff. You know, it's just literally a concrete road and then grass and then trees.
Have you seen
and campers.
The Indy 500? Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah, well,
40 mile an hour and you hit a concrete barrier. Yeah. I remember Johnny Herbert, was when it came to the end of his F1 career, was going to go to Indy cars. And Martin Blundell, Cockney Geezer, as he was known Cockney Geezer said to him, you know, because Johnny Herbert had already had a massive crash, 180 mile an hour crash, right? Just before he came into F1, and it had smashed up his ankles. And he said, mate, you know, you're doing 240 mile an hour and you're going to hit a wall. Your ankle
that's going to end of it. Yeah.
Cannot take another smash like that. It's dangerous. It is. And
And in the same way, Nigel Mansell was told by Colin Chapman not to take part in Le Mans because he was due to take part in Le Mans. And Chapman said it's too dangerous because of the difference in speed of the cars. And he advised him not to do it, so he didn't. And he stayed in Formula 1 and he had some huge accidents in F1 instead. But especially one in Japan, was it in 87 when he broke his back in Japan? But
Mansell, Mansell, all right. Is he a really good driver? Is he not a really good driver? Does he blow his cars up? Does he not blow his cars up? This is the things people have been talking about for a very long time. But, you know, if you focus in on one thing, the guy had a broken back. He got off the whatever the hell he was on to stop him dying or being paraplegic and got back in a race car. Is he a nutter? Is he strong? I mean, if people talk about F1 drivers being gladiators, Mansell was a gladiator. Maybe it was the moustache. Because after he lost the moustache, he played golf. I don't know. But you've got to respect that. Would I do it? Hell no. I like fun like anybody else and love driving. But would I sacrifice my life for it? No chance. Get stuffed. Go away. Right.
You've been asked a question.
The world is asking if I live in Florida. No, I have been to Florida. I spent 2 weeks there. Do you remember in 2010 there was a massive set of storms going down the East Coast? That was when I went to Florida. I saw the last, the fourth from the end of all the space shuttle launches. Very, very privileged to do that. Went to all the usual places apart from Daytona because my outlaws were all shit. And didn't go to the Florida Keys. I would have loved to. What an amazing place. I nearly swam in the sea, but I saw a Portuguese man of war and thought, nah, don't think so. Went to Miami Seaquarium so I could see all the wildlife for real and talk to an absolutely gorgeous lass in a wetsuit called Christelle. And I spent... The dolphins were as creepy as anything, okay? Dolphins kind of like, we have two halves of the brain. Well, dolphins can switch one off and have a sleep. So they keep one eye open while they're swimming along. So they're going round and round and round and round this tank with one eye open looking at people while the other half's asleep. They're creepy. Well, those that's dolphins.
Right. Well, I have a funny story from Florida that I could probably get.
No, you don't.
But it was the first time I went with my wife. Our time we were just engaged, and we went to.
You have a wife.
Yes, and you know.
Oh, okay. I think
we went to.
Hello, Yvonne. Hi.
To Clearwater Beach, and I saw the happiest man alive. And the reason why he was the happiest man alive was that he was out there. He was a young chap. And he was holding a water cannon, like a kind of water hose, and he was spraying down this chute, this water slide chute. And there'd been a local event, some kind of carnival or some kind of thing that was going on. And all the cheerleaders had been doing some kind of dance or whatever. They'd been doing some kind of exhibition. And they were all in their swimming costumes coming down the slide. And all he was doing was wetting the slide. And that was it. And I've never seen a man that was happier in his entire life than this chap who was watching all these women come down the slide. And it was brilliant.
Didn't go down the slide himself.
He just wetted all that. He sprayed all the women as they were coming down the slide. And I thought, well, what is that? It was like, I've never seen a man happier than that ever.
There's a couple of things that I remember from Florida, and Miss Orlando's guide. You may or may not appreciate this.
That story didn't go in the good.
No, really. We managed to go. Hardly persuaded the Outlaws to do something vaguely interesting other than sit there and be crap. And we went to Cape Canaveral, okay? And this was Friday of the first week. And there was, for me, being a total, complete, utter nerd, I'm pretty much geeking out about the fact that I'm stood next to a space shuttle, and this is, and we saw the space shuttle ready for SCS-131 on pad 39B. All that kind of stuff's great, but then there's a thing kind of in the, I'm going to say in the car park, but parking lot, and it's a massive 9-ton ball of marble with all the stars etched on it. And it sat on a water bed.
What was that?
I have no idea. It wasn't me. not this time.
That sound effects I didn't put in the middle of the program.
It was Ants. Ants did that because he's limited. There's this massive 9-ton board, which is super smooth, and it's sat on water, and it's in this cup. And watching all these massive, big American, you know, I'm going to get this thing, and it spins. And you go, yeah, I'm going to get this thing to go with it. And then push against 9 tons of revolving mass. And it was hilarious because they just looked so stupid trying to do it. So I got my youngest, who at the time was 10 years old. Not quite. She was 9 years old. She was just coming up to her 10th birthday, Alana. And I said, right, Alana, because I'm sat on this bench being a git and introverted at that moment. And I said, right, this is what I want you to do. And I got her to do what all these massive, big, muscly Texans, or whatever they are, couldn't do. Because they couldn't fight 9 tons of movement, right? But I got Alana to move everything sort of like with the movement and then gently turn it until it was revolving the other way, but it just took going with the flow and redirecting it. And I've never forgotten that. It's nuts, isn't it? I mean, there's all these amazing things you can see, including weird alligators sat by a bloody pond, huge pond. But a 9-ton revolving ball of marble at Cape Canaveral.
Goodness. Good old I have to say, we went on the simulator at Cape Canaveral at the Kennedy Space Center. You go in the space one and it lifts you right up. And when it falls out, that's what they tell you to put it all away in a locker. And you can tell people who didn't listen because it still comes flying out the bottom. but it was really good fun, actually. And then seeing in the space shuttle was amazing. But you know, in Russia, you know these kind of videos now, these kind of adventure guys that go out and they try and find abandoned artifacts and things like that. They actually found one of the Russian versions of the space shuttle in this old abandoned shed. Yeah, and it was they could get into the thing. Well, they managed to climb. A lot of it had been obviously emptied, but it had been sitting there for years.
Is this your bomb finders thing that you keep going?
Yeah, but it's kind of space shuttle finders. You know, it's like it's not, you know, really.
You've not sent me that link. You've sent the link where they're finding a Ford Mark. Yeah, exactly. Mark to escort.
The thing is, if you're
Range a Rover,
if you're
shit, a prepper, Russian space shuttle, woo!
The ultimate kind of bunker or prepper kind of thing. You have a space shuttle in your barn that you can take off. You can leave the. Yeah, just like they say in Total Recall, get your ass to Mars, isn't it?
So who could we nominate as Div of the Week?
Goodness me.
There's so many. I mean, there's just so many. I've got a nomination. It's not, but the problem is, it's not, and it's my nomination and Ant's nomination. It's not just motorsport or cars, this kind of stuff. It's just kind of a general world view of divviness. And this is the World Health Organization, WHO, who have been, I don't know what they've been, but there was a Sky report and several other news organizations report on how they decided that COVID-19 was not, was not transmitted through human-to-human contact. And this was at the...
Was that not Nancy Pelosi?
This was the end of January. Oh, no, you can't mean Trump. You can't trump me with Trump. That's not fair. Well, yeah. So, the problem is we're asked to believe
they were saying scientists. That though in February. Nancy Pelosi said in February to come to New York and to come to Chinatown for all the big celebrations they had for the New Year, the Chinese New Year, and saying, you know, this virus won't make any difference. You'll be fine. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. They even did a government. No, it just shows you they can't say that they're not. You know, they haven't been warned.
It's just this idea that we should believe experts. The experts are so obviously in the pocket of somebody somewhere. I mean, I'm a scientist. Okay, I'm a scientist, proper scientist. And I have unfortunately been exposed to how science really works in academia. And it's all about getting a career going. You know, it's not actually about... You see on telly, these scientists are fantastic. It's, they're philanthropists and they're trying to get everything better for the world. Is it? Codswallop. They're just people. No, okay, John, I understand what you're saying, okay, but not agreeing's fine, because, you know, science, no, it's not. No. Science is investigating something. Okay, let me bring it down to something in the motorsport arena, okay? Who's the best motorsport? Who's the best driver ever? Is it Jim Clark? Is it Fangio? Is it Schumacher? Is it Senna? Is it Prost? Is it Hamilton? Is it Verstappen? And we all have our opinion, and we can gather data, we can gather information, we can do all that kind of stuff, and we can bring it. There are no set answers to that, and that is the nature of the world. That is everything that goes on. There are some things about driving and motorsport that are set, you know, that the car is the car, that it's the way it works, it's how it's in the era it's in, so it's in the rules of Formula One that is the way that it is. And then we can start talking about, well, with the cars Jim Clark drove and the fact that he drove so many different Formulas so brilliantly and all this kind of stuff, he's the best. We can say that Fangio was in an era where he was an old fat bloke and he was in the most dangerous cars in the world and all this. You know, there's all sorts of stuff we can bring up to support our argument. That's... Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the problem. That, John, honestly, you hit the nail on the head. that's the problem with science, that partly because of the way it's portrayed as if it's factual, when actually it's not. It's evidence-based. So you, I mean, you might be someone that's religious and believes in some kind of spiritual higher power. I mean, I've been there, okay? So you go, based on what I've seen in my life, the evidence I've seen in my life, I believe this. And it's very, very, it's a lot more movable than you think. There's some things that really are very, very secure in knowledge. But if you do a test on something, you've got to start asking the questions like, how was this test done? Did it cover all the bases? Did it really answer the questions you're asking? Could anything else be happening? So, for example, there's a thing that I was listening on again on Radio 4 with Tim Harford, talking about how more men are being killed by this virus than women. So, of course, this idiotic woman who's being Radio 4 and very pro-women is saying, women are stronger than men. It's like, well, hold on. You don't know, are more men going out of the house in China compared with, you know, there's so many factors. It's the variables is part of the problem. This is why I have a problem with this is the problem I have with the language. The language of everything. The language of everything makes a difference. That's why I have such a problem with this. What reading the crap on Facebook about who's the best driver. There's no way you can tell. How can you compare? I get that. But the principle's the same. The principle's the same. Even though there's measures, you could put a measurement to the best paper. But is it comparable, you know? The problem is when you've got something as complex as a virus, as complex as the system that's going on, with as bad, and this is the worst thing, as bad a measurement system as the way the human race is measuring this crap at the moment. I mean, they're saying 9,000 people died of coronavirus in XYZ today. Really? Is it 9,000 people? Are you sure that all the people that died in the past 2 weeks, this number are from the virus? Have you tested all of them? No, they haven't. They've tested a tiny fraction of them. We assume this. You assume this. What you mean is, yeah, I don't know. But you're too egotistical to actually say that because no one will listen to you then. Exactly. If you've got a mortality, how do you know it's not the coronavirus? How do you know anything that happened to that person? All we know about the coronavirus is it's very, very transmittable and people are not taking it seriously. These are the only two things that you can say for certain. Three things is that it's hurting people after they recover if they survive. It's giving them heart disease and it's giving them respiratory problems afterwards. So someone like me, who I could die tomorrow, I wouldn't give a shit. Because what's the point? But the thing is that I've got enough sense to know that I'm going to start going around having parties in my front garden or hugging people randomly or whatever. I understand the purpose of this social isolation thing. It isn't to stop it happening because that's not going to happen. It's to slow it down a bit. So it smears it out so that our intensive care beds can cope or whatever, you know. It is going to happen. Well, that's going to happen anyway, isn't it? honestly, I'm amazed that we're still going. I'm amazed that Tesco's is still providing stuff on the shelves. And honestly, I'm serious. I went to Tesco's earlier tonight, and not Tesco, sorry, Co-op earlier tonight, and they had stuff on the shelf. They had all the little squares you got to stand in to queue up. But you go, well, 2.5 weeks not coming out of my little flat. But then when I had to, because I had no choice,
even the UHT one.
Oh, Cravendale.
Yeah. What, Craven? Nice.
No. Probably made.
Well, you know, how do you get your food then, John? If you're, how you, what are you eating? If you haven't gone.
Yep, I do that.
Frozen. I suppose that you're on your own now, because we've got the kids. You know, we have to go through quite a lot.
Same.
Yeah.
It's easier, isn't it?
No. Well, at 1 hour and 40 minutes, I think for the good of our listeners and viewers,
oh my God,
we might need a break. It has been amazing. I don't think we've hardly actually talked about Formula One, only a little bit. Yeah, but that's the thing.
I can't be the only one that's been a moron.
You two, stay on the line. Stay on the line as I finish the show. But thank you to all our viewers and listeners.
God, I talked a lot today, didn't I?
And watching the Car Sim and Race Driver show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special co-host, none other than Jonathan Sutherland. And
so Andrew glad Barr, you're here, John. Thank you for coming. Diluting my morality.
It's been a great show tonight. If you want to know more, you can go to our website at www.hughhattrick.com.
Do that now.
You can subscribe to our YouTube channel if you want to really help us out.
Go to Orlando or something.
Or you can buy a copy of this. This is by Orlando Guide. It may not be open at the moment.
That's very good. That is very good. You can read up. Look, being prepared is incredibly important.
It's an investment.
Read that, and then in about 10 years' time, when everyone is able to go to... Where is it
Orlando.
Again? That's
Orlando.
It. That, Orlando.
Yeah, it'll be worth
you
something.
Can...
They've borrowed some.
Disney's just opened Disney Plus. They ain't going anywhere, pal.
Thank you very much for listening and watching the show. And we'll be back again for hopefully for more commentary and for another show next week. So make sure you subscribe to all the channels. But take care and remember to drive fast and try not to crash.
No. Not right now. Drive fast on Carmageddon or whatever.